Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Yes, indeed. Here we are, a minute past the hour. It is the 27th day of October 2014. October rapidly running away from us. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That is where you go to find access to the chat room, among other things. The chat room there being the little watering hole, gathering place, what have you. Where we expand into the full multimedia experience that is The Horn between the hours of 6 and 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 and 6 p.m. Pacific Time, Monday through Friday. Good group already gathering. Tonight's header in the chat room, get the duct tape and the hockey puck ready. It's Moran Monday. It is indeed. Good evening, Anatole, and good evening, Jan and Jerry and Jeremy, Kathy, Embrant, Mr. Gibson, and Texas T, all capably moderated by none other than Sparky, longtime indefatigable Horn chat room and Horn Malloy Skype chat group moderator. Thank you, Jeremy. Jeremy noting loud and clear on TuneIn. I had to step out Friday night, therefore missed the show. So happy late birthday to the Horn. Thank you, Jeremy. We had a nice birthday, a nice little celebration Friday evening. I'd like to say that there was a massive, there was a massive celebration. But, I mean, you know, no fireworks or, you know, shooting off the shotgun at midnight or none of that kind of stuff. Had a nice little celebration. It was great to hear from Peter Godbold. But as for the rest of the evening, a little bit of a hangout there in the Horn Malloy Skype chat room for me. And then Agnes and I relaxed by sitting back and watching a few installments of an absolutely captivating series. I got turned on to it by Pterodactyl, a friend of the Horn and friend of the Malloy Show, host of RepublicanDirtyTricks.com. It's a Cinemax series called The Nick, K-N-I-C-K. I don't know how many of you watch it, but I'd never heard of it. But she turned me on to it, recommending it highly, and wow! Just brilliant acting, brilliant writing. Steven Soderbergh directs. And it's the settings and the cinematography are equally captivating. All set in 1900 New York City. With some exteriors and interiors that look decidedly period. And really gives you a good sense for where we were back then, or where we were the way we were. So if you've never seen it, it's worth checking out. Clive Owen is a brilliant actor and is quite convincing in the lead role there. Not going to ruin it for anybody. No. So that's the, and then, of course, Saturday was spent enjoying the, you know, I'm sorry, because I know, hi, Faith, we've got some Oklahoma State folks, fans in the Horn Family Commune congregation, so I'm not gloating. But Saturday afternoon was spent in the enjoyment of a real live, honest-to-good thrashing of the Cowboys of Oklahoma State at their homecoming, no less, by WVU. Next week, things get really interesting. TCU, I believe, in a showdown for the top spot in the Big 12 Conference, which doesn't actually have 12 members, but never mind, let alone 12 states. So there was that. And then, pretty quiet, all in all. Hey, listen, whether it be last Wednesday's program or today's, you really want to check out Dr. Bill O'Brien's last couple of installments, because as our buddy Jack in Shreveport notes, he has in fact been kicking ass and taking names. In this case, deconstructing, along with our good buddy Horst, deconstructing the right-wingery that surrounds the American exceptionalism argument to the objections to the advanced placement history standards promulgated by actual historians. They're scrubbing American exceptionalism from the standards. And by the time Dr. Bill was done with it, I think the old term used once upon a time was that the right-wingers had a good hiding. It had the hide whooped off of them. And there's Carol popping in the chat room. I know, Carol. Java sucks about 90% of the time. So I've been in that place where you are. Good evening, Dwayne, also popping in. Good evening, Mr. Gibson, wandering by. Tim from L.A. is with us. Oh, yeah, good time's going to be had this evening, without a doubt. And, yeah, it's more in Monday. Mm-hmm. We got plenty of material to work with. But I want to start just with some morality of my own observing. Most of y'all know that Ferg was on a big trip. Audio dropped. Not on this end. Yeah, we've been streaming merrily along. Maybe there was a hiccup at the server. But at any rate. I had to go to Pittsburgh to pick him up after his great and lengthy sojourn. Because apparently, and Pittsburgh's not that far at all. I mean, it's 2.5 hours. Flying Southwest into Pittsburgh is a lot cheaper than, say, flying Delta or United or U.S. Scare or American into Charleston. No. Southwest does not fly into Charleston yet. Lord knows, I wish they did. So, that being the case, Ferg had overnighted at Shea Sparky, and then Sparky kindly took him to Sacramento, where he got on his plane, flew to Denver, and then a nonstop from Denver to DeBerg, which is all well and good. There is a lovely, modern airport in Pittsburgh, which the people of Pittsburgh spent a blue fortune building. And it was supposed to be the central hub of U.S. scare. And then U.S. scare screwed them. So lots of, it's still a busy airport. Just, it's not the monumental thing it was supposed to be. But it's a nice airport. And so I was waiting on Ferg down there near baggage claim. And in that point in time, and as far as this portion of Moran Monday is concerned, we'll call this the Dr. John Memorial Edition, because I don't think I ever would have paid attention to something like this had it not been for all the learning that I've been afforded by Dr. John. You know, that's the way the horn works. We all learn from each other, and we sort of pass the hive knowledge along. So in Pennsylvania, there is a relatively important archaeological site called the Meadowcroft Rock Shelter. And it has been argued that the Meadowcroft Rock Shelter provides evidence of much longer human habitation in North America than had previously been thought. Absolutely, Tim. I learned from you, too. We all learn from each other. Also in Pittsburgh is the John Hines Center. John Hines, you may recall, was a Republican senator from the state of Pennsylvania who was killed in a plane crash, died of some awful disease, something like that. But the name means something. Hines. Yeah, that Hines. He was the ketchup baron. And left behind a sizable estate, some of which was used to fund this Center for Public Learning, museum, that kind of thing. And so as you're standing there, waiting for flights to arrive and looking up there to find out which baggage carousel the flight is going to disgorge its contents onto, there's a video you can watch, courtesy of the John Hines, the Hines Center, and the in conjunction with the Meadowcroft Center. And interestingly enough, it's this constantly looping, I guess, DVD, or, well, I mean, it's some sort of, probably just a computer file now, about population increases in the United States, with a particular focus on events in and around the Pittsburgh area. So I stood there watching, and I managed to see the whole loop. And when the segment came on, the little video segment about the Meadowcroft shelter, no, Carol, it's not quite one of those Jesus wrote a dinosaur parables, but it's close. It's noxiously close enough to be annoying. The first segment about the people who they were hunter-gatherers of some sort who inhabited the Meadowcroft shelter. Well, you have to have a video showing the Meadowcroft people doing Meadowcroft hunter-gatherer things. And because of the things I've learned here, and because I try to take things like white privilege into account, and because we are a reality-based community, I stood there in rapt amazement watching this video loop of the Meadowcroft people, who were, it turns out, whiter than baby powder. Yep. Now, Baron, I know. It's just a little museum video about a thing, and we hope people will learn more. I really hope people will learn more, because for the folks who stop and stand there and watch that thing, you can't help but look at all the white folks populating the Meadowcroft Rock Shelter and think, well, I wonder how long after the Mayflower this was. When, in fact, the arguments being put forward is that this is some 15, 20,000 years in the past. Maybe longer. White people. It was not lost on me that this is also co-sponsored by the Smithsonian, one of whose significant officials is one of those people who ascribes to that cockamamie, great big load of baloney argument that people in Portugal are related to Native Americans, indigenous peoples of the Western Hemisphere, which is, of course, is a giant screaming pile of poo. It's kind of the 21st century equivalent of the 19th century and 18th century fixation on, well, what it is, these here natives that we're running across here on this here new world are actually secret Jews. Lost tribes of Israel, they are. So there they were, little girl scraping away at a dried corn cob, scraping the hulls off the corn cob with the jawbone of a panther or something. Maybe an elk or a deer, which would probably make an effective tool for that. There's probably data to back that up. And she's just as, well, she looked a lot like my granddaughter. Wish we'd known about the auditions. And then there's the guy with the shaven head who's standing there, sort of walking around looking important, who looks an awful lot like Joe Bob down to the Jiffy Lube. Who, I might add, ain't no turkey. And then it looped through, and they had gone from being, I'm mixing my metaphors, because Jan and Jerry just said, that's too early for corn, Bob Kincaid, and you're right. Because another segment came along, and it had the same bunch who were standing there doing not hunter-gatherer things, but sedentary agriculture things. And they had bows and arrows and Waddle and Daub homes and that kind of thing. And there was, there was Joe Bob from the Jiffy Lube there. And there was his granddaughter. Just zithering away on that corn cob. And I think there was a pile of pumpkins there, that kind of thing. And I'm thinking, damn. Somebody dropped the ball on this. And every time one segment closed and another would begin, it ran this little thing showing how fast population had accrued in the North American continent. And I couldn't, it was a little off, the aspect ratio was a little off on the screen. So it was down a digit. But the population only began to really take off after, say, 1492, which is a mistake. Because these two continents, North and South America, were the most populous continents on the planet in 1491. More densely populated than Europe or Asia or Africa. Or Australia. We'll count Australia, seeing as how it had been inhabited by humans almost longer than everybody short of Africa. Yeah. So it looped through. I mean, I got there kind of early, and I knew I had a little bit of a weight on my hands, but I didn't want Ferg having to wait on me. Can't stand that. So then they start telling the story of Maria's lace cap. because the story of Pittsburgh really is, and this is what they were trying to accomplish with the whole thing, a story of immigrants. And so they told the story of Maria from Bohemia or somewhere like that. And Maria immigrated as a child to the United States, and they came to some neighborhood of Pittsburgh that had some gigantic steel mill in it in a time of absolutely brutal working conditions, you know, the mid to late 1890s, when the working hours were something like, oh, 96 hours a week, you know, Yeah, 84 hours a week, 6 days at 14 hours a day. And workers were treated like crap, largely because they were trapped since they had immigrated here from other countries. And there were no labor laws. In other words, it was a libertarian paradise. Employers could abuse people at will. Fire, hire, what have you. Kill labor organizers in the middle of the night. All of which happened. But anyway, Maria comes here from the old country. And she has a lace cap that is apparently worn at good old country weddings. And therein she met Jordi. And I'm not making sport of these folks. Theirs is an inspiring story of courage and determination, as is the story of most immigrant families. No, in this case, the egg is on the face of the Meadowcroft Center, the Meadowcroft, whatever, of the Heinz Center, co-sponsored by the Smithsonian. But there was Jordi. And Maria met Jordi, and lo and behold, it turned out that Jordi had also immigrated from the old country and from the same village. They had been peasants in the same village in the same Eastern Central European country and had maybe even known each other, whatever. And Jordi had gotten there earlier, and Jordi had himself a job in the steel mill. And so Jordi set to wooing of Maria in what the video described as his spare time. Now let's remember, he's working an 84-hour work week, most likely. Damn sure not a minute less than a 72-hour work week. You get Sunday off so that you can go to the church so that the preacher can tell you, or the priest, or the rabbi, that you're doing the right thing and not to rise up against authority and to behave yourselves and that you're getting exactly what you deserve in this life. Just be happy about it. It's a veil of tears, damn it. Okay, so, yeah. So, in his spare time, Jordi sets about a wooing of Maria. And eventually, Jordi wins the hand of Maria. And when they get married, Maria is wearing her lace cap from the old country. And so they get married, the video tells you. And then along the way, the narration of the video just sort of throws out there and then moves on. And then in 1929, tragedy struck. A horrible accident at the plant claimed Yorgi's life. And then goes on to talk about how the Yorgi and Maria family decided to stay there in the Pittsburgh area because opportunity was greater in the new United States of America. And meanwhile, I'm standing there looking at the screen going, where's the stop button? Where's the pause button? Wait a minute. No, you can't just say Yorgi died in a terrible accident at the plant and then move on and tell us how the descendants of Yorgi and Maria, the female descendants of Yorgi and Maria, are wearing Maria's lace cap at their weddings to this day, which is what they did. No, that's what they did. Which got me going. Hey, I want to hear more about the terrible, horrible, tragic accident in 1929 at the steel mill. Because there were lots of them. And I mention all of this because it's kind of hand in glove with some of what Dr. Bill was talking about earlier today, the podcast of which will be available under the subdomain for his program at whiterosesociety.org. Right-wing American exceptionalism says that, no, that's what you do. You tell about the tragedy. You mention the tragic accident at the plant, and then that's all. This is not the Yorgi you're looking for. Keep moving. And you talk about the Maria's wedding cap that's still being used to this day, and isn't that charming? Because you don't talk about bad things happening in America, because that's not exceptional. But we know better, don't we? We know that the reason there is a labor movement is because there was management. Or more particularly, we know there was a labor movement because of the behavior of the capital. That was more concerned about, well, as we said down here in the coal fields, the company cares more about a bank mule than they do about a man. Because it was true. If a bank mule got killed, they'd have to buy a new mule. If a miner got killed, they'd just hire a new miner for the same crappy wages they were paying the dead guy and the same crappy conditions. But no, not a word. And not a word about the horrors that were endured by workers in those hellhole factories that made America great. Because an exceptional country doesn't think about things like that. We only think about the happy thing. And then this. Agnes showed me this, as a matter of fact. It all starts with a YouTube video posted by some curious folks who were out driving on I-95 near Richmond on Saturday. Let's see if the audio comes across with anything interesting. If the audio will even load. And I offer this for Moran Monday because It is a little peak. Into the paranoid mindset that infects this country. Nothing in this country can be simply what it is. Adam Hicks was driving along Interstate 64 in Richmond. I guess this was somewhere around the Interstate 64 I-95 interchange. When he tweeted, "Are we in the Twilight Zone?" Why? Well, because Adam Hicks, and he videoed it for us, Adam Hicks sees a convoy of tractor trailers. And then he notices at the on-ramps of the highway, there are Virginia State Police cruisers that are keeping any other traffic from entering the highway. Mm-hmm. He says, "We've seen at least 30 so far. Here's a whole new set of trucks coming up. I want to reiterate, the interstate is blocked off. No incoming traffic. This is Interstate 64, Richmond. No idea what's going on. This is getting more and more bizarre." Okay. And I'll admit, it does look a little weird at the outset. This humongous line of Conway and Walmart and Coca-Cola and CVS semi-tractor trailers all going down the highway in the other direction. And the ominous Virginia State Police stopping traffic at the on-ramps. Well, it turns out that there was really a quite benign explanation for it. It was, in point of fact, the world's largest tractor-trailer convoy for Special Olympics. It was a fundraiser. Now, we can have a discussion about whether or not that much diesel expended and whether that much ultra-fine particulate matter entering and climate change and all. We can have that discussion. But it was what it was. I'm sure there were some birther, deather, tenther, bagger, booger, eater, teabagger types just drooling, wishing they could get as many trucks. Remember the big truck convoy around the Beltway in D.C. that had like three trucks? The blowing of their horns. Glenn Beck saying the revolution had arrived. Yeah. Truckers in 38 states and Canada participated this past Saturday. About 110 vehicles participated in the ride in the Richmond area. The previous year, they raised $20,000 with 49 trucks participating in the 50-mile round-trip convoy along I-95 from Caroline County to Henrico County. I mean, the route, TVR reported the details of the whole thing, but again, like I said, this becomes a Moran Monday nomination because of the responses. This becomes a Moran Monday nomination because of the deep-seated Atne Ute Aitbre Aranoia Pay that infects this country. It's the comments that really make it special. Because thanks to the Glenn Becks and thanks to the Alex Joneses of the world, of this nation, really, nothing can ever be what it is. As Freud once famously said, sometimes a cigar is only a cigar. Well, a cigar can't be only a cigar in a right-wing dominated media scape where everything has some ulterior and nefarious meaning. These were, after all, they had to be. They had to be trucks that had been confiscated by that one in our White House who had truckloads of God-fearing patriots that he was carrying away to the FEMA re-education camps. Right. No, really? And I mean, the comments, oh my goodness. And the comments are still going. Now, bear in mind, this happened on Saturday. But the monkeys are still hopping up and down. I mean, the last comment only coming just a short while ago. They range from the cranky lady who said, "I don't care if it's for the Special Olympics. Surely there's another way to raise money awareness. Total pain in the butt for truckers just trying to get through the area to make their deliveries on time." James says, "This is a terrible event. People were running into each other. Ramp shut down. There has to be a better way to raise awareness than disturb people's travels." Oh, but along comes Letitia. "I don't believe this answer at all." And Mark says, "I was thinking the same." And then Carla said, "I don't believe this either, Letitia. Our government is up to something." "I don't believe wolves in sheep's clothing either. Bunch of BS." That's what Nanny said. And then, by someone who calls themselves Southern Conservative Musician, "You would have to be a Special Olympian to believe this story." Margie is in agreement. She says, "I suspect this is a lie. If they wanted to raise awareness, why not have a single truck with a banner or a sign on it saying something about the Special Olympics? Nobody who witnessed the event was given a clue as to what was going on. So who could this raise awareness? This was a much bigger agenda, I'm sure." And Taffy says, "Not sure how this drew attention or support for the Special Olympics. Seems the trucks would have all worn some kind of Special Olympics banner." And Lisa says, "Very true. There is something else going on." And then, well, there's a whole bunch more, but the coup de grace of sorts, all caps, absolutely, has to be all caps, right? "This is what they want you to believe. Funny how 50 tractor trailers are hosting an event just a day after military started reinstating retired vets. This is all bullshit, a cover-up for something way bigger than Special Olympics." Looks to me, says Bob, who isn't me, looks to me like the government is trucking supplies to an undisclosed location. Maybe they're preparing for a civil revolution that they are provoking. Just a thought. Of course, I think that Bob calling anything that happens in the thin gray settlings between his ears a thought is a mite of a stretch. Then somebody, some sane person, jumps in and says, before you start criticizing others, what have each of you done for another? It is a legitimate fundraiser that all over the U.S., hundreds of truckers, as myself, have given our time, cost, and money to donate to. As usual, no one can be positive in something to help another because it might take away from themselves. Watch the video and understand what we, the truckers, do for you each day. And it's with your negative remarks we continue to do so because we want to, not because we have to. Might want to rethink if today's convoy for Special Olympics benefited your family member or someone you know. Think twice before thinking only of yourself. Well, that wasn't going to go unanswered. Nobody here is speaking negatively of truckers doing their jobs. I believe most of the comments you're thinking of have been related to the apparently grossly inefficient and disruptive nature of this fundraising tactic. This is a perfectly valid observation, which you are not addressing in your comment. And Ben says, wake up. The convoy in the Facebook video looks completely different from the convoy in the link you posted. The convoy is fast-moving. No Special Olympic signs. No people in the side of the road cheering it on. This convoy looked like serious business. For what? This country. And you knew it had to happen. You knew it had to be in there somewhere. Mike S. says, I think these trucks could be part of an Ebola relief plan if the disease were to seriously break out stateside, which if they said that's what it was for, could easily create a nationwide panic. That's the only legitimate thing I could come up with after seeing this, so this huge fundraiser only features trucks from four huge companies. Coke is able to can drinking water, and Walmart could have a role in food supplies, I guess. But no way this is for a Special Olympics fundraiser. Strange how the National Special Olympics interweb page has nothing on this event. Sounds like another government conspiracy to me. And then someone who has given themselves the nickname of Spewing Poo simply said, the white trucks were releasing Ebola in 21 days. You will all find out! This has to be a cover-up for something. In the past, I've worked with the Special Olympics raising money, and there's no way they would spend this on fuel. Something else is up. It's just a little slice of life from America. This isn't going to impact very many lives, except for the Special Olympians that it helps to enable to compete. Carol pointing out, poor bastards commenting didn't realize they were raising money for the Special Olympics. You know, for them. Judy's all upset. BS. If this had been real, they would have announced it ahead of time and told what time the roads would be shut down. I have a child in the Special Olympics, and I see nothing on the site for it. If you're going, while you are, to raise money for a charity, you advertise it. Don't know what is up, but doesn't sit right with me. So where is the media coverage? The film you have is from someone driving down the road that happened to see it. Double BS, and shame on anyone that believes your shit. Oh, yeah, I didn't see a banner on any truck promoting Special Olympics. I think you must think people are some kind of special stupid. And then poor Linda jumps in, again, being sane. If you look on the Special Olympics website, it's on there. Several states have done this, including Delaware, Virginia, and Wisconsin for quite a few years. Just because you haven't heard of it does not make it a government conspiracy. Then the practicalist responds, just because it is acknowledged by Special Olympics doesn't mean it doesn't serve an ulterior purpose. And then Weird responds, this didn't happen here in Wisconsin. These are the people, or examples of the people, who will gladly turn the Senate of the United States back over to the Republican Party. Because freedom! Because we got to do something about that Kenyan usurper in our White House before he sends us all to the FEMA camps. Marka. Hell yeah. So, no, this is not earth-shattering, and gosh, I'd be surprised if any other progressive radio program talked about this today. Maybe it got talked about on right-wing radio in Richmond, where people, it's clear we're going to have a second American civil revolution. I love that phrase particularly, civil revolution. Couldn't quite bring herself to say civil war, but wanted to make sure it wasn't some sort of bloodthirsty revolution like most revolutions are. Oh, mercy. But that should give you a pretty good idea of where the evening's headed. Because we got some first-class morons in the hopper this evening. Oh, hey, I've learned a new culture thing. Thank you, Sergi. The term for Bob's actions. Sergi says, where I'm from in the reality-based community, there's a term for Bob's just a thought. It's called jacking off, J-A-Q-I-N-G, off. J-A-Q stands for just asking questions. It's a term that originated from Fox Noise's reporting style, where they try to spray-paint their Leica cow pies gold by saying, well, we're not definitively saying that Obama is a secret Muslim. We're just asking questions. P.S. Bob, seriously, you're smart enough not to go to the comment sections. Signed, Sergi, jacked off, jerk off, no lubes because he's a rube Kyle. I am smart enough not to go to the comments section. I deliberately went to the comments section, because with a story like this, you know it is going to be a trip to the monkey house, and complete with, you know, all the poo-flinging. I mean, we got a lot of fun to have tonight. Did you know, for instance, and I'm still, really, if any of you happen to notice that this shows up over, you know, with Alex Jones, will you shoot me a note? Because this really is. This is right up his alley. I'm sure I-64 is another NAFTA superhighway. Who knew? And there it is, only 30 miles away from me. 20, maybe. Because, you know, Alex is out there and he's trying to sound the alarm, which is a little tough when you have to talk like this. Trying to sound the alarm about, I'm sorry, Ebola, EGADS. And in this case, it has to do with the fact that the gummit is disappearing patients to keep people from becoming hysterical over what is obviously a pandemic that is already loose in America. No, really. That's ominous.
I'll tell you, the news that I've been gathering over the last few weeks is extremely painful. I'm an American.
Wait a minute, and you thought I was just doing a bad impression of Alex Jones, didn't you?
No, this is really what he sounds like.
I'm a father of three children. I live in Texas. I have family in Dallas. It's my hometown. And in the last, really, 2 weeks, we talked to Dr. Edward Group, who was at a medical conference in Vegas, who talked to senior members of the Border Patrol and ICE, who were there trying to find alternative treatments and ways to bolster the Border Patrol and ICE's immune system and for their families. And they brought up former deputy head of the Border Patrol and now the head of the retirees union, Zach Taylor. And they said that his intel was that indeed they had CDC vehicles on the border and were picking up people they believed had Ebola and were whisking them away to unknown facilities. Then I was contacted by a medical doctor who manages a very large hospital that has other hospitals outside of it. I'll leave it at that, who lived in Austin previously, lives in another major Texas city. I'll just say this, it has a pro football team. In fact, I'm already saying too much. The point is,
oh my God, they're going to come and get him. Exactly, he said too much. They have a football team
right now. And I was sitting on this for a week trying to talk to other medical doctors I know in major cities, and they wouldn't talk to me. They just said, what you're hearing is what we're hearing. And we've got what looks like confirmation of it, but don't you say you talk to me. I don't want to lose my license or worse. They are disappearing people. Now, that's exactly what senior members of the current Border Patrol told us. And we have those whistleblowers. We were directed by some of these sources, as you know, 3 months ago. The New York Times letter picked it up and admitted it was true, to McAllen, Texas. And then we're going to our guest, where the Border Patrol was loading the illegals and their kids up on buses with vouchers into the rest of the country. So our sources are good.
Really? That's how logic works these days? So our sources are good. Of course, then again, I suppose good is a rather fluid adjective now, isn't it? Oh, Jesus, they're disappearing the Ebola patients. I personally don't have the patience to run another minute of this garbage. Naturally, the Drudge Report picked that up and front-paged it. There's an internet concept that runs around out there these days where someone will cite to something like this and then say, this is why we can't have nice things. This is why we can't have nice things, like a nice Senate or a nice House of Representatives that actually wants to do something to make this country better than what it is. And you see, in the final analysis, that's one of those moran-driven problems. The idea that a country should just be what it is, and we can't do any better. All the aspirational stuff that this country used to do, intermixed, of course, interspersed with a lot of brutal screw-ups. See the terrible accident in 1929 in the Pittsburgh area. Well, never mind that. That was... He died to make America greater. Yorgi did. But if you're an American exceptionalist, we can't do anything anymore. We can't... How we ever got to the moon is beyond them. Government boondoggle, money spending, confiscatory taxation's how we got to the moon, but we didn't really. It was a soundstage. Yeah. Jeremy noting LMFAO. The fear. The CDC is picking up random people at the border they believe have Ebola. What the? Alex is in overdrive. The Alex Jones Alex show. Thank you, Jeremy. Oh, yeah. Busy night. Note coming in from Ron and Raleigh. Subject line, truck convoy. Hey, Bob. You remember how in Close Encounters of the Third Kind, how the chase vehicles wore signs of corporations? I remember Piggly Wiggly being one of them. They're looking for UFOs. And Ron had the very same bumper thought that I did. And yes, we are at the end of the Moran Monday filibobster, or at least the first hour thereof. And Steve noted that I haven't said anything about fundraising this evening. And said, all right, let's kick it off. Here's a $50 challenge. I owe the government taxes, but I'd rather give it to the horn than to the government to take it and buy guns to kill people over there whom I've never met and never did anything to me. Speaking of which, I've got a Moran nomination from the Big Apple. Maybe we'll do that after the break. So there is a $50 challenge on the table. If people will come up with 50, Steve will match the 50, and that'll get us two-thirds of the way toward this evening's fundraising. We're trying to get a little bit out front of things here as we roll downhill toward the end of October, which comes to its close on Friday, which is Halloween. Start thinking now. What do we want to do for a Halloween program? Everybody has to talk in a funny voice. That means I would just talk in my regular voice, right? Because of all the funny voices, it's strange, odd, whatever. So yes, there is a $50 challenge on the table, waiting to be picked up by anyone and everyone. 5 at 10, 10 at 5, 2 at 25. Etc. 4 at 11 and 1 at 6. Please, don't make me do the math. It's too early in the week for me to do gazintas and ciphering. Thank you, Steve. Thank you very kindly. $50 on the table. The PayPal interface is at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. And, of course, traditional mail address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318 Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. That $150 we raise of an evening is how we keep all of this going. Some mid-month bills got paid as of Friday night, Saturday. And there's a few more in the hat before the month of November. Jesus, God, really, November? Yes, November begins. Okie doke. Okie doke. So hopefully people will respond to Steve's challenge, and we will go boldly forward into the end of the month. This is listener-supported conversation radio. Light them up if you want to, that being being the phone lines, 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676. That's the Gizmo line, and 304-574-8178 is the Skype line. And, of course, Skype to Skype is simply Bob Kincaid Horn, which is free, 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 free. And, you know, most people have some sort of unlimited long-distance dialing plan now anyway, so that's part of why there isn't a toll-free number here anymore. It's rather superfluous. But anyway, jump right in. The Gizmo line, 304-663-HORN, 4676, or 304-574-8178. Okie doke, okie doke. So break time, and then it looks like your calls.
Breaker 19, this here's a rubber duck. You got a copy on me, Big Ben, come on. Yeah, 10-4, Big Ben, for sure, for sure. By golly, it's clean, clear to Flagtown, come on. Yeah, it's a big 10-4 there, Big Ben. Yeah, we definitely got the front door, good buddy. Mercy sakes alive, looks like we got us a convoy.
It was a dark of the moon on the 6th of June in a Kenworth pulling logs. Cab over Pete with a reefer on and a Jimmy hauling hogs. We is heading for Bear on I-10 about a mile out of Shaky Town. I says, Pigpen, this here's a rubber duck and I'm about to put the hammer down.
Back off them hogs. 10-4, about 5 miles or so. 10, roger, them hogs is getting intense up here.
By the time we got into Tulsa Town, we had 85 trucks in all. But they's a roadblock up on the Cloverleaf, and them bears was wall to wall. Yeah, them smokies as thick as bugs on a bumper. They even had a bear in the air. I says, calling all trucks, this here's the duck. We about to go a hunting bear.
Cause we got great big convoy.
Big Ben? Negatory, Big Ben. You're still too close. Yeah, them hulk is starting to close up my sinuses. Mercy sakes, you better back off another 10.
Well, we rolled up Interstate 44 like a rocket sled on rails. We tore up all of our swindle sheets and left them setting on the scales. By the time we hit that shy town, them bears was getting smart. They'd brought up some reinforcements from the Illinois National Guard. There's armored cars and tanks and jeeps and rigs of every size. Yeah, them chicken coops was full of bears and choppers filled the skies. Well, we shot the line, we went for broke with 1,000 screaming trucks and 11 long-haired friends of Jesus in a chartreuse microbus.
Here, rubber duck, just sodbuster. Come on there, yeah, 10-4, sodbuster. Listen, you want to put that microbus in behind that suicide jockey? Yeah, he's hauling dynamite and he needs all the help he can get.
Well, we laid a strip for the Jersey Shore and prepared to cross the line. I could see the bridge was lined with bears, but it didn't have a doggone dime. I says, Pigpen, this here's a rubber duck. We just ain't going to pay no toll. So we crashed the gate doing 98. I says, let them truckers roll 10-4.
God, I'm old enough to remember that song, that one song, incited an absolute frenzy. An absolute frenzy of citizens band radio mania, and everybody had a handle Then we had to wait till the interweb tubes came along so everybody else could use their handles again. Yeah. Carol says, I have an idea for Halloween. We can all come as our favorite Reich Wingers. We have to do our best impersonation with the most outrageous commentary. I give a mean Michelle Bachmann sermon complete with corndogging. Hoo-wee, corndogging, dang! Maybe I can come as a sort of genocidal eugenicist Todd Kincannon. He's been back up to it again, hasn't he? Yeah, nasty little... Hey, let's go to the phones. Welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello?
This is Edward.
Hey, Edward, how are you?
I'm fine. I just want to let you know I listened to your program last Friday and really enjoyed it.
Well, I'm so glad you did. I am indeed.
And I was so glad to hear Peter Godbold. I almost talked to him one time. Somehow, I got the number to call, and I had listened to him, you know, on the radio, and I was going to call this evening, and I called, and this lovely lady answered the phone, and she said, oh, he has just left, but please call back. Please call back. He'd love to talk to you. Well, I got involved because I had started a business here in Dallas, and I was also elected president of the Dallas Association of Law Librarians, so I had my hands full, and it sort of slipped away. You know how things do.
Oh, indeed, indeed. And the lovely lady who answered the phone was, of course, Agnes.
That's who I thought it was, the adorable Agnes.
Yes, otherwise known as the boss.
Well, you have to watch those redheads, you know.
I'm telling you.
Well, anyway, Peter Godbold was talking about the Gideons. Well, for years, I used to do this more than I do now because I had to attend conventions and all that sort of stuff. Anytime I found a Gideon Bible in a bedside table in a hotel or a motel, I would go to the title page and I would write, warning, this book is hazardous to your health.
Really?
Yep. So if you see that in a Gideon Bible, I put it in there.
Oh, you are a true subversive, Edward.
I know, but it's fun. It's fun.
Yeah, you know, there's all kinds of games you can play fun with the Gideons. You can go through and you can create a list of the really dirty parts of the Bible in the front so people can get to it for easy reference. You know, the part there where Lot's daughters get him all liquored up and then, you know, all of that. And then there's the part about how David loved on Jonathan and Jonathan loved on David. And, yeah.
Oh, I know. There's lots of love in the Bible somewhere. I'm yet to find much about it. But nevertheless, my neighbors around here are just, they're getting married like flies dropping, I'm telling you. And my two my friends in Kansas City are going up to Iowa, I think it is, to do the deed. And talking about being together years, they have been together for about 55 years.
Mercy sakes, and finally going to stop a living in sin.
That's right. They've been living in sin all these years and enjoying every moment of it.
Yeah, I guess they've worn all the sin out. Now they may as well get all legal like.
I don't know. I told them, I said, now, you can't wear veils. And they said, why not? I said, well, you gave that up when you left the convent.
Ooh. not even a nice little lace cap from the old country?
I can be tacky on occasion.
and you wouldn't be nearly as lovable as you are if you weren't.
Well, take care, and I just want to tell you I really enjoyed the program last Friday.
Well, I'm so glad you did. Thank you, Edward, and y'all have a wonderful evening.
Thank you very much.
Bye
bye.
Edward calling from the Dallas area. Lines open 304-663-HORN, 663-4676, or 304-574-8178, which spells absolutely nothing. Believe me, I try. Hell, I even went to a an anagram generator and had no luck, because one doesn't do anything for you on the telephone keypad, dadgummit. Note coming in from Luda with regard to Halloween. How about we call it the Monster Mash Meetup? Okay. The Friday on the Front Porch Monster Mash Meetup. And Monster certainly does fit Michelle Bachmann or Louis Gohmert. I love what Charlie Pierce calls Louis Gohmert. Padishah Emperor for life of the stupid people. Brilliant. Because, among other things, I love a high-quality Dune reference, and there it is with the Padishah Emperor. Speaking of whom, this goes back to last week, but it had Save for More and Monday stamped all over it. Every now and then, they let Louie get, and aren't we glad they do? They let Louie get near a microphone and a video camera. And there's a program out there in the right wingosphere called Point of View. Now, you know that from time to time on this program, I am prone to going off on tangents that run over into the ancient world. I had no idea that Louis Gohmert was also a classicist. That's mainly because he isn't. Witnesseth.
And I've had people say, hey, you know, there's nothing wrong with the... gays in the military. Look at the Greeks. Well, you know, they did have people come along who they loved. It was the same sex and would give them massages before they went into the battle. But you know what? It's a different kind of fighting. It's a different kind of war. And if you're...
Really? I'm sorry. I forgot to mention the duct tape and the hockey pucks. I thought that went without saying on Moran Monday, but God almighty, I really should have warned you, shouldn't I? Now, if you go and you read your ancient sources, what you will find is, for instance, in the description of the Persian army, there is a description of how the Persian army would go into the field with, and they'd bring the Persian emperor's harem with them as well. Or harem, as it might be also pronounced, and the various officers would bring their various wives, and then of course there were always the camp followers, otherwise known as sex trade workers, who would come along too. This is what Louis got. No, because actually, what would happen in the ancient Greek armies, and particularly the army of Sparta. That was a culture that was so authoritarian, autocratically, proto-fascistly, homoerotic as to take any pretense of comedy out of it. When a boy was about 7, he was taken away from his mother and sent to the barracks, where he would be trained to be a brutal warrior. I think by the time a young Spartan lad reached about the age of 13, he would be sent out to torment the Helots, who were the slave class in the Spartan monstrosity. And had to prove his manhood by, like, killing the man and raping the woman or something like that. Kind of makes having a slave class difficult when you're out there sending the teenagers out to bump them off. But yes, in the field, they would sleep with one another, and yes, there would be some degree of sexual relations, but it is not homosexuality like we classically, typically understand it today. because there would come a time when a Spartan man or in the other Greek city states would give that up and go and get a wife and procreate. But remember, you can't have the homos in the military now like they did in ancient Greece, because it's a different kind of warfare. As Jeremy notes, other than the number of people you can turn into red mist and the method that you do it in, war really hasn't ever changed. And yeah, that's true. Except in as much as this obtains. I'm actually in the middle of reading a book right now about warfare in the classical world. And there was a real earnest philosophical debate about whether or not one should use archers and spearmen and slingers, because the ancient Greeks thought that not to be sporting. They preferred hand-to-hand, face-to-face combat so that personal excellence could shine through, because in much the same way, and much the same thing obtained, for instance, in Mesoamerican warfare a few hundred years later, or, you know, about a millennium later, inasmuch as, you picked up sort of the, for lack of a better word, the karma of the enemy that you defeated. And so, at least in the ancient Greek world, the idea of being felled by a spear or an arrow was kind of a point of shame. That's why, in the Iliad, that is why, what happens? What happens to Achilles? Paris slays Achilles with an arrow. Because Paris has been kind of the butt of a whole bunch of derision, you know, wife stealing, cowardice, what have you. But it's Paris who, with an arrow, takes down Achilles by shooting him in his Achilles heel, hence the term. All of this is, however, lost on Louis Gohmert. But the reason I mentioned all of that, that went into that digression, is because bullets are the modern equivalent of arrows. It is a different kind of warfare, Louis, and it's a different kind of warfare that would be absolutely and utterly despised by the ancients, because it is faceless, it is impersonal, and it has no aretai. Is that the Greek word? A-R-E-T-A-I? Aretai? There's no excellence about it. There's no manliness about shooting a gun. Well, that's just because they didn't have a Second Amendment back then. They'd like guns fine. Yeah. Just saying. I mean, there's a reason, for instance, that in basic training in the Marine Corps, that they go to all that trouble at basic of running the the new Marines through all that business with the football helmets and the pugil sticks. They want to instill that hand-to-hand personal combat ethos for a bunch of people that they are later going to hand grenade launchers and mortars and artillery pieces and helicopters and jets and machine guns to. The pugil sticks in basic training may be the very closest that a Marine gets to actual hand-to-hand combat. But anyway, let's check back in with Louis.
And I've had people say, hey, you know, there's nothing wrong with, guys in the military. Look at the Greeks. Well, you know, they did have people come along who they loved, it was the same sex, and would give them massages before they went into the battle. But you know what? It's a different It's a different kind of fighting. It's a different kind of war. And if you're sitting around getting massages all day, ready to go in the big planned battle, then you're not going to last very long. It's guerrilla fighting. You are going to be ultimately vulnerable to terrorism. And, you know, if that's what you start doing in the military, like the Greeks did, as people have said, Louis, you got to understand, you don't even know your history. Oh, yes, I do. I know exactly.
You study military history.
Not a good idea.
No, Louis, you don't know your military history. You don't know diddly. Or, we might say, you don't know dick about military history. Because, and notice the inherent slurring of gay people in there. Because, that, you know, that's what a gay Marine's going to do. A gay Marine's just going to sit around all day getting a massage. Because, you know, your gay Marines, your gay soldiers, your gay sailors, they bring their gay masseur with them. They're really, you know, the Kenyan Muslim usurper has allowed them. There's special Pentagon orders that nobody's allowed to see that says every gay member of the military gets to bring a masseur with them. And you know, it's hard to aim. It is hard to aim a weapon or push the button that fires a Tomahawk cruise missile. Or Lord knows, fly a helicopter with somebody hanging all over you and smollicking about you and lollygagging and massaging on you. Jesus. Might be kind of handy to have an actual member of the military to comment on this kind of crazy shit once in a while. Jesus, Louis. And then, of course, wouldn't be More In Monday without Steve King now, would it? Steve King sort of stepped in it in a way not too long back. Because he told an Iowa newspaper, this being a campaign season, he told the Bee Herald, no, really, the Jefferson, Iowa Bee Herald, covering news in Jefferson and Greene County since 1897, that when he gets to heaven, if he makes it, notice he puts the caveat on there, not if it's real, but if he makes it. They asked him. They asked him about the new ruling by, or not rule of the, well, and of course the bishop said, "Well, no," but this thing that was hailed as a great step forward by Pope Francis, that says, "Hey, you know what? Gay people might actually be human beings." I mean, that's about the upshot of it. Well, Steve King was asked about that. What he told the Bee Herald was, "I would say that what was a sin 2,000 years ago is a sin today, and we need to stick to that principle. I owe it to Pope Francis to read it carefully and read it with precision before I pass judgment on it. I'd just say that, in fact, to pass judgment on his document seems a bit presumptuous as I hear myself say that." And then he was asked the Lulu questions, "What about divorce and cohabitation?" And he said, "I think I'll not comment on that part yet. I'll just say what was a sin 2,000 years ago is a sin today. And people that were condemned to hell 2,000 years ago, I don't expect to meet them should I make it to heaven, so let's stick with that principle." Yeah. So you can rest easy, gay folks. You don't have to worry about sharing heaven with Steve King. You're apparently going to get a separate but equal place of eternal torment. I mean, you want to talk about eternal torment, spending eternity with Steve King. and you know, his corn dog. That's a kind of eternal torment. What did Mark Twain say? Heaven for the climate, hell for the company? Yeah. Steve noting, subject line, gay hockey. Hell, Bob, when I play gay hockey, I play goal with a masseuse right behind me. I think that'd be a masseur. Unless you're, you know, out there sort of testing the waters, Steve. But no, I get the meaning. Oh, by the way, for some reason or another, I keep getting emails from GOP.com. Republican victory is within reach, but six critical Senate races are now classified as toss-ups. And this weekend, senior Democrat Senator Chuck Schumer said, I think we will hold the Senate. We still need 27,178, 77, 75, 4, 3, 2, 1 supporters to contribute to the final Election Day voter fraud. I mean, fund. You know, so they can keep all those gay soldiers from getting their gay soldier massages before they get shot and go to not Steve King heaven. By the way, speaking of Steve and his gay hockey playing with his masseur, Steve has put a challenge on the table this evening to help us reach our fundraising goal for the night. Steve will match the first $50 that come in any combination thereof, thereby doubling your money. So far, no takers as we reach the halfway point of this More and Monday program. But back to Steve King for a minute. So after he said that gay people aren't going to heaven with him, Steve King was offered an opportunity to backtrack. And naturally, being Steve King, Steve Cantaloupe's King, those illegal immigrants have calves the size of cantaloupes. Thinking about those immigrant calves, are you, Steve? Really? Nothing homoerotic about a right-winger sitting around and pondering male illegal immigrant calves. They're as big as cantaloupes. Can you imagine the size of... Oh, my God, I've got to go to confession. Speaking of which, by the way, last season I watched the inaugural season of Amazon's Alpha House, which has to do with a bunch of Republican senators sharing a house in D.C. The cast is led by John Goodman as a Republican senator from North Carolina named Gil John Biggs, former basketball coach, with cameos to begin each season by Bill Murray, which are just precious. Two words, amusement park. And I watched the season two premiere yesterday. And there is a character in there. Oh, what is his? What is his first name? His last name is Malloy. Just kind of noticed. I mean, I don't think he's any kin, but he plays this clueless Republican senator from Utah, whose sexuality is so ambiguous as to, and it's the fact that he's clueless to it. With, can't think of her name. She plays his wife. And they have a group of fundamentalist right-wing senators called the Singing Senators who delivered a rendition of Mr. Sandman in the opening episode that was just delightful. Not to be missed. And for some reason or another, that's what, but anyway, you might enjoy it. Gary Trudeau writes it, you know, Doonesbury, so it's pretty sharp. Anyway, Steve King was offered an opportunity to sort of ameliorate the statement that all the homos is going to hell. They did this by what's the program? Steve Maltzberg. Oh, it's the Steve Maltzberg Show. Go figure. I hope you didn't put the hockey puck away. That's all I'm saying.
Let me ask you something, because maybe I'll give you a chance to address this, because I Google you today, and you know what comes up. That you told a newspaper or somebody that if you're lucky enough to get into heaven, you're not going to see any gay people there, that you believe that they're going to hell. At least that's what I'm reading. Tell me, what did you say, and what did you mean?
Well, I read the article. I believe that was Talking Points memo, and here is their style. If you read the article, you see that the headline is not relevant to the quotes that are used. The quotes that are used are two or three words, and then they write a sentence with two or three words.
Well, Congressman, I'm reading Salon, and the headline is Tea Party Congressman Steve King pretty sure gay people are going to hell. So, Joe, we got about 40 seconds.
Okay, they got about 40 seconds, but before they take the 40 seconds, can I point out for the record, let the record reflect, that the quotes I shared with you came from the Jones and Green County, Iowa, Moral Volcano and Bugle Call of Freedom, the actual paper that published the quotes about not expecting to see any gay sinners in heaven. You see, the grace of Christ Jesus does not attach to the homos. Murderers, Adolf Hitler, Stalin, rapists, arsonists, kitty rapists, all have access to the saving grace of Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ. But not the gay. Nope. No grace for you. No fruit cup. So it wasn't, I've never even seen the story from Talking Points memo or from Salon that Steve Maltzberg was reading. I just read the newspaper article. And he says what he says. But that's okay. He's a Republican, and I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. We expect this of them. Hence, the remainder.
Tell us, correct the record.
It's all false. It's fabricated. What I said was it's between them and God. And I said, what was the sin 2,000 years ago as the sin today? That was what I said. And I stand on what I said.
And you also said you don't expect, if you get into heaven yourself, you don't expect to be there with any of the homos. You said that. But you say you didn't. Oh, Steve. Lying's a sin too, buddy. That you can just snack on a cracker or something and get all better, right? But wait. He's got a few more people to send off to the cornfield. The pits of hell.
And they've manufactured this, and so, you know, maybe I won't meet the people that distort the truth in the next life either, and I'm going to do my best to get to heaven.
Oh, what a laugh riot that Steve King and that Steve Maltzberg are. Steve and Steve. Wait a minute. I thought God made Adam and Eve, not Steve and Steve. And then Steve, of course, another Steve, different Steve. Steve with the challenge on the table that hasn't been responded to. Says, wait a sec. What about things that weren't a sin 2,000 years ago but are now? Like, you know, slavery. Oh, oopsie. Also, Steve suggesting, as far as Halloween Friday evening, let's do a mock inauguration of President-elect Sarah Palin. Oh, too scary for me, Steve. Too scary. Oh, live in South Carolina, pointing out the singing senators were a real thing. Trent Lott and Wide Stance Larry Craig were members. They did mostly Oak Ridge Boys tunes, including Elvira. We hosted them with the Oaks for a show in Branson. Oh, my God. Well, if you've got Amazon Prime or whatever, you'll enjoy episode number one. A bunch of straight guys singing Mr. Sandman. Make him the cutest that I've ever seen. Yeah, that. It's pretty much precious. Let's go to the Gizmo line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Keep talking to me.
I'm talking to you, Bill.
Good, because I had such a bad connection before. I had to dial back, and all you did something, and all of a sudden it came up to.
Well, yeah, you have to give me a chance. I have to attach the call to the Gizmo line. It's not a bad connection.
Oh. Yeah, my hearing is not what it should be anyway. Don't stand in front of loud electric bass players, loud guitar players. Hell, I finished my alleged career. I'd be set up to the right of the stage with two monitors blasted in my face so I could hear what the hell I was doing. Man, if you sing badly, normally, when you try to sing when you can't even hear it, that's when it's really... I lost the key so much I had to break into the house at night to get home. You know, it's one of the oldest jokes around. But, yeah, you hear down the head talking about the Pittsburgh situation. There's a Woody Guthrie song called Hard Traveler, and I wish somebody could pull that up. Because he sings one chorus about working... And poor, I've been blasting, and I've been firing, and I've been pouring that red hot iron because that was a horrible place. And the steel mills were not that safe to this day. But in those days, I had a cousin who worked for a railroad line that hauled unfinished stuff in and finished product out of the mills. We had two or three mills that were really close together. I mean, they'd light up the sky and. You know where Euclid Avenue is. You go all the way downtown to 30th Street and look, and you'd look south, and I'd see that stuff at night. And then when the wind would come out of the south, I was looking, so I go to the Army Navy store and buy one of those surplus World War One gas masks, except I tried it once, and the women thought I looked so much better with it on that, I can't do that.
He'll be here all night. Don't try the veal.
Yeah, he'll be here all night. Is right. But you hit it. You hit it on the head. I did get one of the people who works for the RN, a man who comes in here and sees me every once a month. He stops by and says, "Why are you still breathing, aren't you old?" Anyway, his wife fixed two stuffed cabbages. And she's of Polish descent. Bob, I felt like I was sinning to eat the things. They were... Because that's the kind of stuff you can't find in restaurants very often.
No.
You're lucky. But it's just... another thing, the situation with this that you described, with the convoy, what the hell is with these people, Bob?
And then they take
a stupid idea and spread it, you know?
We are, this country has been deliberately driven into the grips of a form of right-wing paranoia that is awfully handy to the very cynical people who do the driving.
Yeah.
I love the one about how it was a covert Ebola response exercise.
Oh yeah, because I don't know that. I mean, I have a background. You know, when you're married to an RN for 10 years, and then My second wife had a degree in psychology and a master's, and she was basically a child alcohol counselor and worker. God knows she knew how to drink herself in her day, so she was good at it. And the Battered Women's Shelter was another place that she ran in Lake County, and that was nice to get angry husbands calling me and threatening, and then they give me their name, and I'd call the police, I'd make a report. And the cop says, well, we'll have on a file call after they show up. And I said, what do I do if they try to get in? The guy says, well, Bill, you know what to do. Yeah, Mr. Mossberg sitting over there with five loaves in him. But that's not a way I want to deal with things, Bob. You know, it's...
No.
I got other things to do that are more important than... getting rid of a moron maybe has its... You know, you have a concept that maybe it should be done. We could use a lot, thousands of less than we have, you know. Oh, brother. But you hit it with that. I mean, I can't believe, but I used to listen to it as an all-night show out of Cincinnati that where I get a lot of calls from truckers.
And oh, yeah.
It used to be entertaining. Yeah. Because the old man who started it, the dad started the thing, and he has a background in old-time R&B and old-time music. And, hell, I learned a lot about blues from a station in WLAC that we used to run 6 hours a night. And they were selling 45s, three for $4 or three for $5 or something out of these wholesale joints. Because in the 50s, in a small town, if you were black and wanted to buy this stuff, you couldn't find it. You couldn't buy it. Nobody was catering to you, you know. Nobody was catering to you for anything. I was talking with my aide today about the young man that got killed down there, a kid from Chicago who was 13 years old. Famous case, and I can't remember his name right now. And I said, when I first read about that, I said, I couldn't believe that somebody would do a thing like that. You know, because I was a stupid enough kid to think that, how crazy are these people, anyhow? But we're seeing, you know, you're bringing out a mass load of it. And it's good to know that people are as stupid as they are. Because they buy this stuff. Which scares me.
But Bill, I think, I mean, it's easy, and you know, I did it. I blame this all on Alex Jones and Glenn Beck and that bunch. But there is something, I think if we put this question to Dr. Bill, we might get an entirely different answer. This is the end result also of a people who have not been taught critical thinking skills, but have instead been taught something that passes for critical thinking. And by that I mean assuming that something nefarious is taking place until such time as, and there is no such time when it can be proven not to be nefarious. Do you understand what I'm getting at?
Yeah.
In other words, the jack-offs, the just asking questions people that Sergi was talking about, Those folks are, you know, they're trying to pass for smart, if not cute. But what we're dealing with here is what I call the Cleese factor. You know, we had that clip from John Cleese a few weeks ago where he said there are people out there who are so dumb they are not smart enough to realize they are dumb. And that sounds kind of contradictory, but I think it's real. And in this case, let me give you the evolution of how this came about. So Agnes is surfing the web, and she comes and shows me this thing, and I see the original video, and you can see all these Walmart trucks, all these CVS trucks, all these Coca-Cola trucks. You know what my first thought was? These are all, because any time, for instance, when a horrible hurricane hits, usually, the Walmart trucks will hit the road delivering water.
Yeah.
So will the Coca-Cola trucks. So will the Budweiser trucks. because they're all kind of in the water business. So I'm thinking maybe they're, then I'm thinking it's hurricane season, maybe they're restocking or, and then I stop and I think, oh my God, the right wingers are going to have a field day. They're going to go nuts. So the next place I went with it was to say, okay. And I just used a search engine and checked out Big Convoy, Virginia, October 25th. And boom, the first thing that popped with it was this WTVR or RTF or whatever it was, story about this thing for Special Olympics. And like Sergi said, I ought to know better than to go to the comments. I did it deliberately. I went and looked at the comments because I knew that even though there was a perfectly benign and rational explanation for what was happening, it would not be sufficient for the same people who go to Confederate reenactments and who attend teabagger rallies and listen to Alex Jones and tune in to Glenn Beck's Blaze and are quite certain that that one is going to impose martial law. And hell, I didn't have to scroll all the way down the page before I got my first martial law reference.
You say that. I heard things when Bush was running it, when the old man Bush, well, not the old man, not the senator, you know, the first president Bush, that he wasn't going to leave office. I heard this rumor. And I heard the same thing about Clinton. Who starts this crap anyhow?
I heard it about W. And I halfway believed it about W. Because, not because W was any different from any other president, but because he was surrounded by some absolutely monstrous examples of members of the human race who would do anything to retain the reins of power. I speculated on it. Where does it get its start? It's hard to say. In the right wingosphere, though, it's not that hard to find. I mean, you know, we had the clip from Alex Jones, in which he says that the CDC is just randomly rounding up Ebola patients who are coming across the dry Rio Grande River down there in Texas because we're being invaded by African Ebola from Mexico.
From Mexico, yeah. It's, and you know, and I know, you haven't read all of Hammett's stuff. The one, this corkscrew set in a small town that isn't in a state that isn't a state yet. And that was only one that what it could have been at that point in time was Arizona. They were the last continental states. Well, Alaska is continental, but it's slightly different, you know. The last ones to come in, and they were, in this book, Corkscrew, there were people right on the border then. And I know two or three Canadian descended guys that I know who are Americans now, but their families walked across the border and set up housekeeping in the States.
There's a high-profile example of that. Back when Utah wanted to be a state or wanted to become a state, one of the conditions of statehood was that they give up the notion of polygamy.
Polygamy, yeah.
And all the hardcore polygamists said, hell no, and marched their happy asses right across the Mexican border.
Yeah, into Mexico, yes.
Where the father of the last Republican presidential nominee was born.
Yep.
George Romney of Michigan later was a born Mexican. But he never had to go, you know, but being nice and white, he never had to go through any sort of naturalization process. They just walked their happy Mormon asses back across the border.
Did you ever hear Romney's speech that he made after he visited Vietnam?
Oh yeah, the brainwashed speech.
Yes.
He was leading Nixon in the polls for the Republican nomination in 1968 till he did that.
Yep. And so he went and told the truth. know, I have a certain fascination with the French War in Indochina because it was the gateway for us to go into another. But the French, of course, have been there since 1870. So we got to buy that good French roast and chicory from a Vietnamese restaurant here.
Right.
Delicatessen. Because that was one of the good things the French left around the world was that type of coffee had style. Plus, man, you can't beat a Vietnamese. We have more Vietnamese and Thai restaurants in this city. And what was the movie, The Christmas Story, where they ended up eating a Christmas dinner at a Chinese restaurant?
Right.
I ended up having Thanksgiving dinner there in one because there was nothing else open. My granddad never drove a car in his life. As a machinist, you never drove a car. I love it, you know. It's okay. Good for you. You saved a lot of money. Too bad your grandson decided to go the other way, you know.
Right.
Like I was having a conniption. I couldn't remember the type of wheels I had on this big pickup truck from Arizona. Well, they were called splitter rims. It finally came to me. And a splitter rim tire was a dangerous thing to dismount. That splitter rim was blow up the in the head, you know. Whenever they worked in the spiders, they put them in a cage. And so if they blew up anything, it would, you know, hit the cage. You wouldn't hit them. But you can't stay up with this. American history is a fascinating thing because we keep reliving it. I'm working on a Max Hastings book on World War One that the most fascinating part of it, Bob, was the sociology of Russia, Austro-Hungary, Germans. The social structure at that time in Europe was just... Oh, by the way, they mentioned one thing that happened in England in about 1909. The British sent troops against the coal miners in Britain. Are you familiar with that?
Yes.
Yeah, so you would be. You know, the only thing I really know about coal was standing on the heat grate in a house. Geez, how warm I got. I wonder how much damage I was doing to my lungs at age 5, you know, or 4. Oh, well, you'll never learn.
Well, I mentioned earlier that magnificent series, The Nick, on Cinemax, which has been picked up for the next season, which is cool. That thing grabbed me because there's a scene where the doctor is down by the furnace working on inventing a new medical device, a medical instrument. And there's a scene, you know, the camera's pulled back a little bit, and there's a scene of lumps of coal falling down the coal chute into the basement there where it's fed into the furnace. And, you know, we forget and I don't think we should. It's easy to forget the role that coal played in this country's development. Every horrible accident that happened in a steel mill in Pittsburgh had something to do with coal because the entire steel industry was fueled by coal. And then there are the 100,000 or so people who were killed in the last 120 years or so just trying to acquire the stuff for the capitalist monsters who were running the mines and selling it in order to build, you know, giant mansions and stuff.
Yep. Well, that was they were doing a lot of surface mining in Ohio. There was a big machine that was parked there.
It's called a drag line.
Yeah, it was a big drag line. It had a name, too, this one did.
Bucyrus Erie, and they give them cute names.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
So there was a band with the name Cyrus Erie operating out of Cleveland.
There's the bucket on a drag line, Bill, will hold 24 compact cars. That's how much earth it moves in one bite.
Yeah, because they get the hell out of it down there. The only thing they were forced to do was to set up land reclamation, and there are camping areas and fishing ponds that are down in that area. It's really, you never know what actually happened there. Because they, of course, they destroy the land, and then they replenish it with some kind of a, they probably got a tax break for doing it too, you know. Oh,
sure.
The way it looked.
Yeah, speaking of tax breaks, that reminds, and more, and Monday and everything, that reminds me, I got one for you, Bill. You'll love this. This is something that's cooking down here in West Virginia right now. So it's a real big deal around here that the Boy Scouts have decided to make their permanent home my county, where I live. There was a nasty old strip mine site that, of course, had never been properly reclaimed. And the land company had it, and the Bechtel Corporation, everybody will recognize that name.
Oh, yeah.
Decided that, and we must understand that the Boy Scouts are just a little, you know, they used to be a noble organization. Now they're just a wingnut incubator. They incubate little right-wing authoritarian Republicans.
Yep.
It's mighty hard. And now, to be fair, we've got some former Eagle Scouts out there in the Horn Family Commune congregation who managed somehow to resist the indoctrination. But they, you know, it is almost de rigueur that if you are an admiral or a general in the American military, somewhere in your background, you are also an Eagle Scout.
Yep.
So they spend $100 million building this Summit Bechtel Boy Scout Reserve, okay? And this is, you know, this isn't just a West Virginia story. This is the modern capitalist miracle and the raping of the commons. Probably the bad, that's a wrong word. I need to stop using rape for anything but rape.
No.
But anyway, so they build this monumental, humongous Taj Mahal Boy Scout camp that if I was to try to go onto the premises, my ass would be arrested and thrown under the jail. Okay? Private property, damn it! And, of course, it's private property that is a 501c3 tax-exempt organization. Now, everybody who did all the dirt work and the prep and the building and the construction donated all of that. So they got tax breaks on the front end. All right? And no matter how much money comes into this facility, not a penny of taxes is paid because the Boy Scouts are a 501c3 tax-exempt organization.
Yes,
right? With me so far?
Yep.
So there is actually a constitutional amendment on my ballot next Tuesday that would allow the Boy Scouts of America, a tax-exempt organization, to rent this property out for meetings of other groups, be it for-profit or not-for-profit, and charge money for it, and then not have to pay any taxes to the state of West Virginia as a result. In other words, turn this place into a profit generator in which the Boy Scouts never pay a penny of tax for profit-driven enterprises.
Oh, man. Oh, boy. Yeah, there's some way to gimmick up everything, isn't there?
There's some way to steal. You know, this is stealing. This is stealing because, you know what, if you're a hotel operator in Fayette County or a restaurant operator, and you hope to reap some sort of financial benefit from the presence of this Boy Scout boondoggle in our county, well, every penny you take in, you pay taxes.
Taxes,
sales taxes, property taxes, what have you. Well, what they want to do then is turn this place into a freaking resort and make it a destination. And then once everybody's onto the property, they stay there, and they don't go to the local restaurants, and they don't go to the local hotels, and they reap in the restaurant monies, the lodging monies, the tour monies, the tourism monies, and they never pay a dime in taxes.
Jesus Christ.
And I'd say this thing's got a pretty fair chance of passing. So the amendment language says, now this is just for the Boy Scouts. It's not for anybody else. You know, it's one of those narrowly crafted exceptions. We've seen how those work, right?
Yep.
Because let's say you're the first assembly of God and herpetological sanctuary, and you think, you know what I want to do? I want to open me up a coffee house.
Yeah.
And a gym. And a restaurant. But the Boy Scouts have done that, and they don't have to pay any taxes. Why should I? Now, I'm going to go into competition against for-profit businesses, but I don't want to pay any taxes. Now, meanwhile, we've got, say, Coal River Mountain Watch, a 501c3, tax-exempt charitable organization. Do you reckon some member of the House of Delegates or the Senate of the state of West Virginia would introduce a constitutional amendment for them if they wanted to open up, say, a little diner there at the headquarters and
yep.
feed folks,
Company
you know,
Alpha.
cook organic foods and cruelty free stuff and well hell no
bunch of tree huggers.
Nobody support that kind of place. No. That's contrary to their way of thinking about everything.
Son of a gun.
There was a guy I met when I worked at the Wall Street Journal. He was a reporter for the Journal. And Dennis knows him well. Representative Kucinich knows him well. His guy's name was Roldo, R-O-L-D-O, Bartomol. Spelled just like it sounds. And I hope if he's still alive. He was running a big expose on this stuff. This once-a-year community donate money deal, Red Feather, they used to call it, or Community Chest, I forget what they call it. United Appeal, was that it?
Oh, the United Way?
Yeah, because he's written exposés, this guy, about that situation and how so much of the money goes to some of the richest suburbs in the area. A lot of the money goes there. But I'll leave you with that, and if people want to check him out, go ahead. Because I have trouble with the internet finding information because the new computer isn't finished yet, and I have to wait for the guys who do the work to find time to do the work. They can't find it that easily, you know. So the new one sits here, and I don't touch it because with my luck and lack of vision, I could. It's the old story, I could screw up a free meal, you know? I don't mess with too much stuff. But there's so much of this kind of stuff going on with a so-called, sometimes a so-called charitable. Well, what was the thing about the race? There was people having big races, and it was named after the woman, and her husband was very wealthy, and it was a good thing. It was against breast cancer, you know, supposedly.
Right.
And there's more to it than I care to talk about because I'm not a certified expert on the whole thing, you know.
Right.
But anyway, I'll let you go and make room for somebody else. But, yeah, you, the Woody Guthrie thing where he sings, I've been poor, blasting, and I've been fired, and I've been poor, and had red hot iron. Yeah, that's Pittsburgh. That was Pittsburgh in its day, you know. Anyway, you take care of yourself.
I'm going to try, Bill. You do the same.
Good night, Matt.
Bye now. Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, calling from the Cleveland area. The Gizmo line is open if you want to jump in. Area code 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676, or the other line is 304-574-8178, or Skype to Skype is simply Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. Going back a little bit to, since this is more in Monday, going back a little bit to Louis Gohmert worried about all them Greeks getting those massages and whatnot. Check out the Sacred Band of Thebes, T-H-E-B-E-S. Our buddy the Angry Indian reminding me, the Sacred Band of Thebes was a troop of picked soldiers consisting of 150 pairs of male lovers, which formed the elite force of the Theban army in the 4th century B.C. It is said to have been organized by the Theban commander Gorgidas in 378 BCE and to have played a crucial role in the Battle of Leuctra. It was annihilated by Philip II of Macedon in the Battle of Chaeronea in 338 BCE. But not because Philip II of Macedon didn't have any homosexuality in his military. Holy cow, nice work if you can get it. Thanks, Greg. Greg with an email. Check out the salary of the head of the Boy Scouts. Boy Scouts of America, $815,000. Greg says, this may be from 2011, as there is a column that has that date. We are being hit up by the United Way constantly. I'm done with organized charity, he says. Well, we are certainly disorganized here, and there is a $50 challenge. In other words, for the first 50 bucks that come in, Steve is willing to double it and make it turn it into 100. No takers thus far at 5 minutes past the third hour of the program. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, neighbor, how you doing?
Pretty good.
I come to talk to you about our least favorite topic.
Oh, dear, yes?
Ebola.
Oh.
Have you seen the Gateway Pundit's breaking news? The Ebola nurse's ties to the CDC were scrubbed from the Internet. She's a far-left progressive and an Obama supporter.
Oh, she's Jesus,
card-carrying progressive. First of all, I want to know why I didn't get my card.
Yeah, where's mine? I mean,
I don't know the secret handshake.
Yeah, that's like Peter with the gay agenda. I mean, you don't get any gayer than Peter Godbold, and the man never, not so much as once, got a fax copy of the gay agenda.
Ain't that the truth? But
I mean, how am I supposed to get all that? How am I supposed to get the message out if I don't have my card carrying progressive secret code decoder ring?
Well, do you know the secret handshake? Because nobody told me that either. I'm feeling a little left out here.
I don't even have the certificate suitable for framing.
Well, I can make you one.
Well, you know what? Let's put that on the list, Carol.
Let's put that on the list
right behind the marvelously coherent T-shirts.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Hey, listen, I found the hockey pucks on sale for $1.49 a piece.
Oh.
I figure we can slap the horn logo on them babies and start selling them for premiums.
Hot damn. You know,
Devin,
that's nice. Devin, I had no idea they were so cheap. I think that's less expensive than a baseball. Devin just wrote in and said, card check. So apparently card-carrying progressives are the only ones who can be card-checked in the United States. For everybody else, it's communism.
Well, I, like you, decided that I had to go straight to the comments section.
Oh, no.
Because, oh, yeah.
Yeah, listen, only trained professionals can go to the comments section.
Listen.
Don't try this at all.
This is why we don't do two shows a night, okay?
Right.
Because you can't take much of this. But seriously, their thing is now is that she was a secret operative for the CDC. She was never with Doctors with Borders. And if you go to the Doctors with Borders Facebook page, they unequivocally say that she was there as a field representative for Doctors Without Borders. So the conspiracy goes all the way to West Africa.
Good God.
And she's a political hack. How is... I'm telling you.
Oh, is this... Now, is this the Asian lady?
No. This is the lady. This is Casey Hickox, who came from West Africa on Friday night.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
She was in the air when Christie's quarantine order went into effect. And they hit her... They kept her in a room for like 8 hours with nothing to eat or drink. When she complained, they finally gave her some water and a granola bar. So now she's been on an airplane for 2 days. She's exhausted. She's jet lagged. And they hit her with a forehead scanner. She didn't have a fever when she got there. And then after 8 hours, they hit her with a forehead scanner again after being, you know, dehydrated and exhausted.
That will mess with body temperature.
Well, and then you're upset and your face is flushed, and but, you know, that's not how you take it. And she's like, they're not accurate. If you need to get an oral thermometer and take my temperature. So it came up 101, and they're like, oh, she's got the Ebolas. So they, of course, put her in an unheated tent outside the hospital, took all of her clothes, put her in a paper gown, a cot, no heat, a toilet, no shower, no TV, a weak cell phone signal, and said, sit there for 21 days. And she hired a lawyer, which I would have.
Well, damn right. I mean, see, this is...
She got to the hospital, and a trained medical professional took her temperature orally. It came out 98.6, and he looked at her, and he goes, no way do you have a temperature. He goes, your face is flushed. And she goes, yeah, I'm pretty pissed. And, but they put her in the quarantine because they were ordered to put her in quarantine. So she's, now they're out there attacking her character, her credentials, her everything.
God almighty.
And supposedly Google, the Google cache has been strangely wiped of her cached profile. They dug up a picture off of her Facebook page where she was posing in front of, like, the New York skyline with a bestie. And because she's posing with a woman, she's clearly gay. She's gay.
Yeah. Probably. And was the woman giving her a massage?
No. They were just, you know, doing the bestie hugging thing on the Staten Island Ferry. You know, like, I've had my picture taken a dozen times with my girlfriends. In exactly the same spot on the same boat.
Wait, does that mean the Ebola is a gay disease? Is that where we're going now?
No, it's still a wrong colored disease. That's part of the problem.
Well, I mean, I figured we'd know.
Here's a choice comment.
Okay, yes, please.
No surprise here. One can smell a stinking Democrat female as easily as any other polecat, progressive, organizer, liberal, egalitarian, communist, agitator, tyrant. May all feminazis go to hell. You can smell them because they're all allergic to Vagisil.
Gateway pundit, right?
Yeah.
Stay classy.
Stay classy. But
well,
remember,
see,
they're not racist,
when
they're not sexist.
No, and they don't have a women problem. No misogyny there. Well, actually, when you brought up Ebola, I thought you were going somewhere entirely different.
No.
I thought you were going to talk about the sons of Ousmane Dramé.
I can't even pronounce that.
Ousmane Dramé is from Senegal, which is curiously neither Liberia, Sierra Leone, nor Guinea.
Sounds black to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, he is a recent immigrant to New York City. And they go to school in the Bronx.
Mm-hmm.
Their two children do. Ousmane Dramé said, they call me from the school, tell me come. They're beating your children. I rush, beating. I rush, go there. My children was very hurt, headached. He was crying, laying on the floor, more than 10 children on top of him, beating him.
And the school couldn't stop this?
His two sons were beaten for being African, and as the beatings were proceeding, they called the children Ebola.
Charming.
At a press conference today, the African Advisory Council said the two boys had been harassed for weeks. As soon as they go to the gym, they don't want to touch the ball, Dramé said. They say, guys have Ebola, don't touch the ball. These are two boys, 11 and 13 years old, Carol, born in the United States of America. American citizens. But they were raised in Senegal. Yeah, they are. A 9-year-old girl has been subjected to similar taunts. God almighty. And again, and I don't know, maybe I'm making a mistake here, Carol, but I don't think I am. This is the same mindset that says a bunch of trucks on a highway are on their way to the secret martial law Ebola outbreak center.
Uh-huh. I know. I was going to write a song, but I can't find anything that rhymes with your FEMA re-education camp.
Oh, that sounds like a job. Might as well rhyme something with orange.
Exactly.
But we are, we're in big trouble.
Yes.
Bad trouble. Mm-hmm. This place, I mean, this country is just a gnat's ass away from loonies, and that's an unfair, unfortunate word. What do you call it? I mean, when people took to the streets in Ferguson, Carol, it was for a very goddamn good reason.
Mm-hmm.
But now the white folks are about on the verge of boiling into the street because they've got a terrible case of the stupid.
Oh, I was behind an SUV on the interstate on Sunday, and there was a big sign in the back of it and it said, "Dear Ferguson, put your hands down and get a job." See, that's the common wisdom here by the white people, is that if these lazy niggers would just go get a job.
Yeah, no. No, you're using the wrong word. Shiftless. Shiftless.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, check this out from Steve in China. Things overheard today, Steve writes. The conspiracy is the government. The conspiracy is the government is the conspiracy. God, sometimes I wish it were all just about the law of negation, but really it's about politics. Here's what politics can do. Politics can convince the general public and a few others better placed that the vast majority of working class people are not just that, a class of people who labor for a living, who engage in physical labor even when they aren't pulling plows to break up rocky soil or digging ditches in the hot sun all day for the dollar it takes to get them through the next day of ditch digging. People who use a keyboard to punch data into a corporate database are laborers, even when blisters on the hands are replaced by nerve damage to the wrists or problems in the lower back. People are laborers even if they are willing to pay $5 for their morning shot of caffeine rather than demanding a tea time for a shot of that same caffeine along with a little bit of sugar and carbohydrate in the form of bread and jam. Tea time, you know, started with the laboring class. I love this. Steve, the way Steve thinks is just beautiful. It was a concession. It was a concession the owners of capital made to the folks they were working to death in the factories, mines, and sweatshops of merry old England. But wealth and privilege and, yes, political power always managed to rewrite history and in the process obliterate the true status of labor. And labor is real, and when it is also honest, it is noble. Whenever these gentlemen and ladies take a little sip or munch daintily on a scone, they aren't partaking so much of a ritual born in privilege as sanctioned by the power of wealth to create leisure, to steal generations, which are things of time and of life and of human being. Empty leisure, the leisure uninformed by talent, education, skill, or philosophy, always mocks and degrades the status of true labor, the fruit, if you will, of discipline, application, and, yes, collective reward, or shared wealth, or common effort, solidarity in action, say. Perhaps, dare we hope, in union politics is the business. Politics is the business when it is the politics of a decadent generation of making dirt and decrepitude and ugliness from everything pure and vital and beautiful. It is the nasty, mean-spirited, and imbecilic circus that our media have become. Make no mistake, wealth is political power, is law, is wealth. But government conspiracy? Nah, that's just an old name for idle speculation. And idle speculation, if you will pardon the expression, ain't Greek philosophy any more than an apple pie is an important number. Wow.
Nice.
And you know, there's truth there. I mean, I'm afraid that I'm making a mountain out of a molehill with this business of this business of, you know, the people going nuts over the little convoy.
No, because it's symptomatic, Bob, of everything that's kind of going on right now. it's the death by a thousand paper cuts phenomenon that we were discussing last week. It's make everybody suspicious and afraid of everybody else. Blame your lot in life on your neighbor. Pit everybody against everybody while the wealthy elite go to the bank, cash their big fat checks, and laugh at us the whole way.
Yeah, all, right. Laugh all the way to the bank and all the way back.
Exactly. For more. And I've tried joking my way out of it with these people, going, trying to explain to them, okay, I get that you're suspicious, but let's not go for the character attack on a woman who was doing good work there. No, she was with the CDC, and she was never with them.
Yeah, but just time out. Oh, time out. You know, the football coach running out on the field at 2:16. Oh, time out.
Mm-hmm.
Since when is being with the CDC a bad thing? See, that's what underlies all of this. I mean, that's the really sticky goo at the bottom of the swamp. That's the stuff that sucks you under.
To quote one of the posters, that makes her a paid Obozo operative.
I really try to leave the choice use of the F word to people who use it as artistes, like, you know, you and Sandra.
Me.
Yeah. But, you know, no, I hear Oboe, and it's like, oh, fuck me, running!
Yeah.
So wait, I guess these yokels want to live in a country where disease just runs rampant and untrammeled because freedom? Is that where we are? Because if that's where we are, I'm going straight to the fruit jar.
Oh, yeah. And this is why we need guns, because this is where the conversation went that I had with this person today.
Right, to shoot the Ebola people. The monster, again, we're back there. The monsters are due on Maple Street.
Mm-hmm.
And the monsters have been living on Maple
Street. Zombies?
Right, exactly. I mean, we're all there. We, you know, hello. Ferg and I, you know, I don't have any tattoos, Carol.
Ferg me neither,
because
gravity knows my address.
See, yeah, it starts out a hot air balloon and winds up a bath escape. Is that what you're talking about?
Something like that.
But Ferg thinks I need a tattoo. And so, you know, we played around with some things, because he went and got his first. He's been wanting one for years, and he earned him some money and paid for it with his own money, and that's okay. Because he didn't get a hula girl or anything. No, you know what he got?
What?
He got the words of Julius Caesar upon crossing the Rubicon in Latin. With a laurel wreath around it. Alea iacta est. Let the dice fly.
You have such a cool kid.
He is. He's pretty cool. So I told him what I would do is I would take the Kincaid family motto, which is, this I'll defend. And on the Kincaid family crest, it's underneath a castle. I thought I did it, you know, get like an Appalachian mountainscape, you know,
yeah,
full color, and put in Latin, hic defendam, which is, this I'll defend. But, you know, hic, get it? Hic, see what I did there?
I get it.
Hic defendam, this hillbilly will defend. But no, you've in a trice, Carol, you've changed my mind. I am getting a portrait of goddamn Pogo on my arm with the words, we have met the enemy, and they is us.
It is us. Jeez. And I was going to go look up Latin for fuck 'em if they can't take a joke.
I far prefer joke 'em if they can't take a fuck, but, you know. Oh, God.
Our family crest is the flying middle finger.
Right. Ah, how do you spell that? Yeah. And by the way, I don't know how much of a TV junkie you are, but if you can get your hands on the Nick, I think you're gonna just go wild.
Get my hands on what?
The Nick, the Cinemax series. If you can find some way to, it is brilliant. A hospital in New York City in 1900.
Ooh, I'll have to see if I can find that. Yeah. I've got Amazon Prime. I've been macking on Alpha House.
See, I didn't even know the second season was out, and now I get to just have an Alpha House binge. I was plum runt, Carol, when the singing senators broke into Mr. Sandman, and the two lesbian aides were in the back going, do they realize? No, they do know this was a girl group. Hmm.
Oh, that is so funny. Amy Sedaris plays his
wife. Sedaris. Yes, that's what I was trying to remember. Yes.
She is so brilliant on that.
Oh, she's perfect. She's perfect. And, I mean, it's pretty well, it's kind of skewerish. Now, I don't know if they'll have her back, but Wanda Sykes last season played the,
oh, God,
the in-your-face progressive senator.
Yes.
And who was, who was the woman who played the other in-your-face progressive? Well, no, the blonde white woman was the in-your-face progressive senator. Wanda Sykes was the senator who tried to get along and just kind of tried to guide these four Republicans towards something resembling humanity.
It was a restrained role for Wanda.
It was. And the Bill Murray cameos are just precious.
They are. That first, the opening scene of the opening of the pilot with the alarm going off and him opening his eyes screaming, fuck!
Yeah.
As the feds are coming to cart him off to jail.
did you have an appointment to turn yourself in at the federal prison today? Fuck! Yeah. Because we've all had those, not necessarily involving federal prison, but we've all had those moments where we wake up going, fuck!
Yes, that's what made it so precious.
And so he's back with the second season. It opens with him. Two words, amusement park. Because they still haven't told us what he did. They just hinted.
No, exactly.
But when you hear that amusement park is involved, well... It's sort of.
At any rate, yeah. If anybody wants to go to the Gateway Pundit, don't. I've done it for you.
Because you're a giver.
Because I'm a giver. So.
I trust you, but I trust you. You posted it on your Facebook page, right?
Oh, hail to the yes.
So I'm going to go and have my own little season in hell after the program, and just scroll down till I find yours.
Absolutely, and like I said, the real gold in that whole thing is in the comments section, because it tells you everything you need to know about Merca.
And about right-wingers.
And about the liberal mainstream media.
Yeah, boy, and Vagisil even, Jesus God.
And Vagisil, I could not.
And what? Wait, what did I see earlier? You got to go, I understand. But what did I see on Facebook earlier today about corn dogs? What was this?
That was me. It was never look a man in the eye while eating a corn dog. Write that down. That was my advice to everyone today.
God damn, that's tattooable, Carol.
It is. The other one was I have these daily interactions with my beloved where he comes in and asks me a question and always leaves the room shaking his head. We're going to celebrate our 20th anniversary here in a few weeks. And he walked in and he looked at me and he goes, honey, does size really matter? And I looked at him and I said, of course it does, honey. Nobody wants to order a small pizza.
Oh, I saw that. Whoa, that hurts.
Yeah, he left the room shaking his head.
Oh, my God, I got to tell you, though, Devin just sent me in some Ebola memes. How Americans View the World, August 2014. Canada, much ado about nothing. Lower 48, everything is awesome. Alaska, also awesome but cold. Mexico, immigrant breeding grounds. Central America doesn't exist. South America just says drugs. Antarctica says cold. Greenland says Santa. Iceland says volcano. England says Hogwarts. Europe says here be dragon training and Westeros. Northern Asia says Dothraki Sea. Central Asia, Easteros. China, where stuff is made. India, call center. Australia, Asgard, home of Thor. New Zealand, Middle Earth. Japan, early U.S. nuclear test site. And by the way, the writing on all of this is precious because it looks like it was put on a chalkboard by Jethro Bodine. Four arrows to the northwest of Australia with MH370 and a question mark. The Indian Ocean is marked Pirate Bay. The west coast of Africa is marked Slaver's Bay. The ocean between Antarctica and the Cape of Good Hope is Shivering Sea, and then all in black, the entire continent of Africa, simply labeled Ebola.
Devin, you make us so proud.
Oh, that just hurts. And, of course, the Middle East is labeled Axis of Evil. Oh, my God, here's another. Oh, this one's actually a GIF of the Ebola virus trailing like a comet trailing a rainbow tail.
Oh, God. Well, it's true. We learned today that Ebola is our punishment for the gays.
Dear God.
It
had to happen, right?
You know a man of God had to come out and say something about it.
Because that's what man's a God do when they're not talking about how the homos ain't going to heaven.
Hey, I'm telling you, they've got an unnatural fascination with butt sex, but hey, their thing.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed. Carol, good to hear from you, dear.
You too, buddy. Take care.
Oh, by the way, Agnes had her first taste of elderberry jam.
What did she think?
I can't. Well, I know better than to think I can ever read her mind. But it was. But the expression of pure bliss on her face.
It's a half an orgasm on a biscuit. I'm telling you.
Mm-mm-mm. And sourdough toast ain't shabby.
Hear you.
Yes, indeed.
I know how to eat.
Yes, you do. And you know, I introduced her to it by saying, "Oh, Viking warrior princess." To which she responded, "Yes, dear."
I also know how to address a box.
Oh, you do. You absolutely do. And you know how to make a Viking warrior princess happy in the first place.
Hey, if the Viking warrior princess is happy, Bob's happy.
Everybody is happy. Exactly.
There you go.
Carol, have a wonderful evening.
I'm a giver, Bob.
You're a giver.
You too, buddy.
All right. Bye now.
Bye.
She's a giver. Our very own news ninja, Carol Baker. The line is open, 304-663-4676, 304-663-HORN, H-O-R-N. Thank you. Going out to Greg. Greg just responded out of Iowa to Steve's challenge and met it. So Steve's More and Monday challenge has been met in one fell swoop, leaving only $50 to be raised to finish out the evening's fundraising, which is kind of a big deal. And so if anybody else wants to answer Greg's answering of Steve's challenge, that would be more than welcome. That would be massively welcome. Or, you know, $5, $10, doesn't matter. It all keeps all of this going. What else? It's about 26 minutes before the hour. Couple of things. That's kind of got save for prayer meeting Wednesday on it. I mentioned it in conversation with Carol, but I want to reiterate that at a school in the Bronx, two boys, 11 and 13, who were born in the United States of America but had been raised in Senegal, were ganged up on and beaten in school while the children hollered Ebola. Don't think I'm going to be queuing up Lee Greenwood tonight. No. And then this. I couldn't resist putting this on my Facebook page. Comes out of the New York Times from Saturday. It is a long, long account by Rukmini Kalamachi. It is the story of ISIS hostages, ISIL hostages, whatever, who were freed, who talked about the ordeal that was endured by those hostages who were murdered. And Rukmini Kalamachi tells a good story. And that is not to say that I'm saying that any portion of this is untrue. I think it is. I have no reason to believe that it has been in any wise falsified. Let's be clear about that. Rukmini Kalamachi writes, "The hostages were taken out of their cell one by one. In a private room, their captors asked each of them three intimate questions, a standard technique used to obtain proof that a prisoner is still alive in a kidnapping negotiation. James Foley returned to the cell he shared with nearly two dozen other Western hostages and collapsed in tears of joy. The questions his kidnappers had asked were so personal, who cried at your brother's wedding, who was the captain of your high school soccer team, that he knew they were finally in touch with his family. It was December 2013, and more than a year had passed since Mr. Foley vanished on a road in northern Syria. Finally, his worried parents would know he was alive, he told his fellow captors. His government, he believed, would soon negotiate his release. What appeared to be a turning point was in fact the start of a downward spiral for Mr. Foley, a 40-year-old journalist that ended in August when he was forced to his knees somewhere in the bald hills of Syria and beheaded as a camera rolled. His videotaped death was a very public end to a hidden ordeal. The story of what happened in the Islamic State's underground network of prisons in Syria is one of excruciating suffering. Mr. Foley and his fellow hostages were routinely beaten and subjected to waterboarding. For months, they were starved and threatened with execution by one group of fighters, only to be handed off to another group that brought them sweets and contemplated freeing them. The prisoners banded together, playing games to pass the endless hours. But as conditions grew more desperate, they turned on one another. Some, including Mr. Foley, sought comfort in the faith of their captors, embracing Islam and taking Muslim names. Their captivity coincided with the rise of the group that came to be known as the Islamic State out of the chaos of the Syrian civil war. It did not exist on the day Mr. Foley was abducted, but it slowly grew to become the most powerful and feared rebel movement in the region. By the second year of Mr. Foley's imprisonment, the group had amassed close to two dozen hostages and devised a strategy to trade them for cash. And like I said, it is a long account. But we don't have to read it all right now. I won't. You can read perfectly well for yourself. It's at nytimes.com. it is in that moment where Rukmini Kalamachi writes, the story of what happened in the Islamic State's underground network of prisons in Syria is one of excruciating suffering. Mr. Foley and his fellow hostages were routinely beaten and subjected to waterboarding. Let's do a global search and replace on that. Let's replace Islamic State with CIA. Let's replace Mr. Foley with Mr. Arar. The story of what happened in the CIA's underground network of prisons in Syria is one of excruciating suffering. Mr. Arar and his fellow hostages were routinely beaten and subjected to waterboarding. Because that really happened! Mar Arar held dual Syrian and Canadian citizenship. He was traveling and had a layover at JFK International Airport in September 2002. He had been on a family vacation to Tunis. He was on his way home to Canada. That is when he was kidnapped in your name, in my name, in the name of the United States of America, and in the name of the War on Terror, and was deported. Not deported. No. He was kidnapped and rendered to Syria. There he was imprisoned and tortured day in and day out. He actually was going to be deported by the United States for no good reason, because he held dual Canadian and Syrian citizenship. He held Syrian citizenship because Syria does not allow the renunciation of citizenship. He was rendered by the CIA to Syria, where he was blindfolded, shackled, and put in a van. They made me bend my head down in the back seat, he recalled. Then these men started beating me. Every time I tried to talk, they beat me. Then he was sent to a secret prison, where he was beaten for several more hours, and he was driven to enter a false confession that he had attended an Al-Qaeda training camp. He said, I was willing to do anything to stop the torture. He was kept in a cell that was 3 feet by 6 feet, and he described it as a grave, and it had no light, and an abundance of rats. 10 months he spent in solitary confinement, and was beaten regularly with shredded cables. He could hear the screams of other people being tortured in cells nearby. See, that's one of the problems with torture. When you start engaging in it and you think you're engaging in it from the moral high ground, you'd rather quickly find out that the moral high ground is a swamp. Indeed. And Rukmini Kalamachi doesn't make mention in this article of the fact that the war on terror and the attack on the people of Iraq and the war in Afghanistan was cheerled by the New York Times, who is writing Rukmini Kalamachi's checks to this day, which then, you know, clear. There is no query over where it is that engaging in torture gets us. What? What? ISIS is engaging in waterboarding? Wherever could they get such a notion? Mar Arar spent seconds that felt like hours, hours that felt like days, days that felt like years, months that felt like decades in hell. And the people who put the policies in place, well, one of them paints pictures of his face in a mirror in the shower, while another one walks free with some decent human being's heart beating in his chest, and no justice can reach them. I remember how in 2004, the New York Times suppressed information showing that the Iraq War was a fraud that they had helped to gin up because they didn't want to affect the outcome of the election and be accused of an October surprise. And so George W. Bush was arguably reelected. More mothers and fathers, sons and daughters died or were raped by their own fellow soldiers. More blood was shed, more nightmares dreamt, more IEDs went off by the side of the road, and there is no justice. Let's go to the gizmo line. Hey, welcome to the program.
What's up, Bob?
We know, Jim.
Not much. I was just going to touch a little bit on what it was Bill was talking about the whole the tax thing. I mean, you know, the tax exempt status. I think that you just, and I know, I think we kind of talked about this before, but we should just eliminate that. Yeah, we the people, but I mean.
I don't know that we need to eliminate it across the board. It has a grounding in reality.
No, I kind of understand.
I mean, if Coal River Mountain Watch had to pay federal taxes and state taxes, they'd be out of business. Well, they're not in business in the first place. They would not exist. They could not afford it. And most small tax-exempt organizations are similar. What we need to do is rein in who gets it. Remember, the NFL, the billion-dollar-a-year industry NFL, is a 501c3 tax-exempt organization. Major League Baseball is a tax-exempt 501c3 charitable organization. Okay? Whatever church James Hagee runs is a tax exempt organization. Maybe what we need to do, maybe the rational thing would be to put a cap on tax exempt organizations. I mean, because when you get to be the size of, say, the Sierra Club or the Susan G. Komen for the Cure Breast Cancer Foundation or the NFL. You can afford to pay your taxes, don't you think?
Yeah, Jerry Lewis telethon thing.
Yeah, or there's a big difference between tax exemptions for, say, the little church in the Wildwood and some mega cathedral in Florida with 19 jumbotrons. And music and musical and electronic equipment that would make Pink Floyd weep.
Yeah, okay, I definitely see that point, and that's a valid point. But maybe it's just sardonic, sarcastic side of me that just thinks, well, if you have that much faith or in your organization, you know, just. Tipping the 9 or 10%, whatever extra to cover the taxes, but I guess I'm living in a dream world.
Well, I don't think it's a dream world per se. It is a problem that needs solved. The Boy Scouts of America are tax exempt, and nobody's going after that tax exemption. But by golly, there is something just icky about the idea of letting a tax exempt organization get involved in commerce and continue to be tax exempt.
Well, not only that, but in politics, and technically, a lot of churches, they stick their nose into it.
Yeah, that needs to be broadly enforced. And I mean, I know for a fact that with most of the anti-mountaintop removal outfits that are 501c3s, you know, they would rather drop a rock on their own feet than engage in politics. You know, like endorsing a candidate or saying somebody should or should not be elected. It doesn't happen. To the point that they err on the side of caution so that things that are even legal for them to do, they don't do. On the other hand, there are those ignorant babies who think they're being persecuted of the religion industry who somehow think that their First Amendment rights are being violated because they can't endorse candidates from the pulpit and use the power of heaven and hell to make people vote the way they want them to.
Yeah. Well, the other thing was, what was it? I heard it was some corporation or whatever got like a $400 million. I think it's $400 billion. Maybe that's too much. $400 billion. I think it's one of the oil corporations tax write off. Something like if you got that kind of money to write off, I mean, should you really even be getting a tax write off, particularly when the I mean, that kind of money could, like, get the budget in order, which the Republicans seem to be all worried about.
Yeah, sure. Because all tax breaks are a form of diminution of the commons. Because the tax base of the United States belongs to us. Now, it gets given away to corporations and the religion industry for the most part, but it still belongs to us. And we can remedy that problem if, of course, we had, and why do I bother finishing the sentence, as Mark Fopp used to say, if we had a responsive, competent government.
Well, exactly. I mean, unfortunately... I try and hold on to hope a little bit, but, you know, I got to salute you for that. And I think what you do is one hell of a job, but I'm kind of almost past the Malloy point.
a lot of us go back and forth across that line. I won't speak for him, but I dare say Malloy himself does. You want to believe that this is not a doomed nation.
Planet.
Well, you want to believe that this is not a nation that has the power to doom a planet. But we do. And so, I mean, look, I'm dealing with this right now. I got an election coming up where my congressman is in trouble, and he's a Democrat, and he's being opposed by a friend of Koch's, teabagger type. And, of course, there's the race between Natalie Tennant and Shelley Moore Capito, and the apple falleth not far from the tree where Shelley Moore Capito is concerned. You know, they're multimillionaires, and they care about as much about an ordinary working West Virginian as a hog does about a Sunday table service. They just want to get their feet in the trough. And yet, at the same time, I look at a Nick Joe Rahal or a Natalie Tennant, and I think, how do you possibly reflect my values? You don't. What in God's name have you ever done to earn my vote? And see, that's where I get myself into trouble, and that's where people take issue with me when I ask the question, don't votes have to be earned? A politician who is owed a vote? Well, hell, let's deal away with the voting. I mean, you know, you just deserve it, so we'll just by acclamation, right?
on the. Well, I mean, it's kind of like Mary Landrieu down here. And actually, she's the better of the three candidates. But because she's in Louisiana, she can't really do anything like I would propose to do. I think we kind of touched on that before. And, I mean, there's an independent and a Republican running against her. And because Louisiana election laws, you know, even if she wins, even though they're like three different parties, there will be a runoff. And, you know, unless she gets a majority, you know, it's going to be tough. You know, it's like a month later, a runoff.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it doesn't speak well for the...
But the other side of that coin, Jim, is the urge to say, hey, you know what? Maybe the only way it ever gets better is if we give these rotten bastards the bit and let them take it in their teeth and run for it for all they're worth and absolutely destroy this country. And then maybe there will be enough of us left over to rebuild it out of their ashes.
I think that's wishful thinking, man. I think the
moral place that I go to after I indulge thinking like that is to say to myself, wait a minute. While they're burning it to the ground, who are the ones who are going to be suffering? How dare I suppose to say that I know that it's okay to sacrifice them, to engage in some better thee than me politics? But then again, you know, we'll burn too.
Yeah, that's the part I'm worried about. it's pretty really weird. I mean, I thought things would, you know, I thought, yeah, after Vietnam War and everything, I thought people would kind of catch a clue, but they just went into, seems like disco, and it's really good. And then everybody started getting their jobs and climbing the corporate ladder to some extent. And there was some prosperity for a while, although, you know, they had problems. But, I mean, ever since your hero and mine and Ronald Reagan, I mean, it's just been, I can't believe how right wing, you know, how far right wing this country's gone. I mean, it's just goddamn.
And yet, if you talk with even teabaggers, you can, if you just engage with them, you can find these moments of sanity. They're there. I mean, well, okay, this is a story maybe for tomorrow, but you could, as long as you don't bring the overt stuff in, if you try to establish the relationship first, you can make a little headway. But then you're going to run up, but it depends on how you respond. I mean, I was talking to a fellow the other day. He said, I don't know, that Obama's war on coal. I said, wait, please. Please, can we talk about that? Well, what? And I began, you know, there's no war on coal. There is nothing that is going to make the coal come back. Do you think that there are untapped reserves out there? They wouldn't be blowing mountains up if there were 6-foot seams of coal underground. They're not there. The economy of Central Appalachia is collapsing, is going to collapse utterly and completely unless we start doing something about it now. And now may be too late. And the people who are hollering war on coal are only doing that to terrify you. There's a war, but it's a war on you and me, not on coal. I haven't seen any coal barons standing with their little noses up against a frosty window pane, have you? And he goes, no, I ain't. I said, see?
Yeah, I definitely see that. It's just like with trying to change from not just coal, but oil and get more solar friendly, and not only friendly, but seek it out, go for it. But it just seems to be like there's no people just, I know. Hard to change.
And unfortunately, we got to get the heck out of here because I got 30 seconds to close things out. Jim, good to hear from you.
Yeah, let's check you later.
All right, bye now. Hey, thanks, everybody, for a wonderful Moran Monday. Thanks to Greg for meeting Steve's challenge. That means we got $50 to go. I guess we'll start the evening tomorrow trying to raise $200. Thanks to our whole all volunteer staff and all of you who make all of this worthwhile. And yes, Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.